The Netball Show with Flyhawk, raising the bar for netball and women's sport.
There's no barriers that don't get told. Caitlin Bassett's, movement out of Giants, you know, and I guess just where Julie Fitzgerald sat and what she thought about that. And then there's a real in-depth look as we will go into episode 5 and 6 over the next week, which takes us right into the guts of finals and following the four teams in particular that made finals. So it's a great journey. It's very exciting. The UK will get access to that once SSN season starts next week on the Netball Live app. So, yeah, get amongst it.
I've seen some criticism around, obviously I said I haven't watched it, that it isn't quite transparent enough, or it doesn't quite go in depth enough, especially into some of the season's controversies, as you pointed out. Do you think that's a fair criticism?
It depends what the specs of, you know, of the job were. You know, if we had an hour episode, we'd get right into that. But to have an hour episode, you can go and double the budget. So, you know, at the end of the day, netball had a certain budget that they needed to spend. And hopefully after delivering this documentary, there'll be a number of sponsors and partners that look at it and see it as a great opportunity and possibly a greater investment tool going forward. So I think everyone needs to keep real perspective around where this story is at. And the other thing is, and I can say this right from the get-go, this is a journey for our sport. Not every club was as easy to work with in this documentary. So there were three clubs in particular that gave 100% access to the documentary. Now, not all stories unfolded from those clubs. There were other clubs that gave pretty good access, and there's some clubs that were really difficult to deal with. And I think that's a really big learning curve. I'm hoping that all clubs will look at this documentary and realise what an opportunity is to expose sponsors, expose athletes and stories, build interest in club. So, you know, it's a journey for our sport. I think other sports, and I use AFL over here as a great example, where they understand the power of documentary making, and that, you know, access is absolutely essential. And, you know, hopefully going forward we'll get a greater buy-in from all clubs if there's further documentaries to come for our sport.
I mean, I certainly agree with you. I think access is, I mean, in our day and age as well with social media, access, it feels like everything. And someone, as a journalist of netball, I do sometimes feel like that transparency we do lack. And it comes down to things like marketability, as you spoke about earlier. But this is why this documentary is also so fascinating to me. It's how the sport also wants to grant that access. And it's really interesting that you pointed out that you have, you know, some clubs that are really up for it 100% and the others that still feel uncomfortable perhaps with that. But there's I think with reception to documentaries like this, that actually fans trust the more that's given to them. And it'd be interesting to see if this does pick up for a second series or whatever, that there isn't suddenly more access being granted by those perhaps reluctant to start with.
I would hope that. And like I said, you know, everything's a journey and everything's an opportunity to learn and where we grow. And, as far as I'm concerned, going forward, there's great opportunity to dig deeper into some of the stories of our sport and some of the characters of our sport. And I think if you need to keep perspective in watching documentaries, that they are built not just for those that know the game.
Sure.
You know, they are built to capture the broader audience and drive, I guess, if possible, drive new viewers to the game. You always have to keep your eye on that when you're building something around your sport. So, those, as you say, if they're critics or whatever, the good news is they're watching it. So that's a big tick. But certainly, you know, as I said, there'd be 297 hours of footage that we're still sitting on, that there's lots of content in that, but it doesn't always make the screen. That's the reality of a documentary.
Sounds quite ominous that you have all of this footage, but I think you're right. And I think that if that is the only criticism that they want more, then there's absolutely, incentive to go back and say, hey, look, our fans want more. We want more depth. Like, someone give us the money. So as an Australian, we also have to talk briefly about this Constellation Cup that's just been. It's been a while, but I haven't forgotten. A series that obviously went 3-1 to New Zealand for the second time ever. There was so much about it that made it different to any other cup, and no other cup will be like it. You know, quarantine, new coach, earthquake, one venue, captaincy. What can we take away from it? What has been taken away from it? You know, is it just chaos, or is it, you know, will there have been genuine lessons learned?
Yeah, I think it's lessons in amongst chaos, you know, and that's, if I were the coach, that's what I'd be looking at, is that once you remove all the chaos in amongst that, there were some valuable lessons for both countries, I think. I mean, you know, first and foremost, we should be exceptionally proud that we were able to achieve the Constellation Cup in the circumstances that were at the time, and certainly support from Suncourt Super Netball clubs across the board, because, you know, they lost access to their players for quite a proportional period of the pre-season, you know, schedule. So it was tough, and that wasn't, you know, the extension of that commitment abroad got further with all of the quarantine issues and so on and so forth. So I think the fact that the Constellation Cup even was able to be seen by us as fans and viewers was extraordinary. I think, you know, there's some great for New Zealand, and to be honest with you, to me they were the favourites going into this series with all of the circumstances of where the Diamonds were at. But I was really impressed with the Diamonds from the point of view of I don't like to lose, and as an Australian and a fan, I don't like losing. So there was an element of disappointment for me, because I felt we had the potential and the opportunities to win, but I think there's some reality that needed to be taken into consideration with regards to the unity of this group and the timeframes that they had leading in. But I think more importantly was Stacey Marinkovic as the new coach, and this, I say this just with my coaching hat on, you know, you need time as a coach. You need time to get with your group and in the chair. She'll reflect upon that. That'll be one of the greatest learnings that she'll have as a coach. And obviously I have access to Stacey on a daily basis. I have spoken to her, and she said it, that she is really excited by the intel that she's been able to take away from that first Constellation Cup. And, you know, that's the most important thing. And ultimately the eye is on the Comm Games and the World Cup, and that's where she'll need to sharpen her tools accordingly.
I was just sitting here thinking, is there enough time? If time is the problem, obviously we've got a year, you know, we've already mentioned a year or so to go. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure it'll be a fascinating one.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's not ideal, Chloe. You know, time-wise, it's not ideal. And certainly once you know the boundaries you're working with as a coach, then you can shape accordingly. And I think, you know, that's the reality is Stace at the moment, and Nolene would be no different. They're trying to work very quickly to get in place the international calendar that sits between now and the Commonwealth Games in particular. And once that's established, then, you know, then you can start having a look at exactly the time frame you've got and start prioritising what it is that you're going to have to do in the time frame you're given. So there's a lot of that detail to unfold. And then there'll be a real onus, not just on the coaching staff, but on the playing group. So, you know, I think the Suncorp Super Netball season will play a enormous tool and platform for intel, and, you know, like you said before, it's with the majors just around the corner, performance becomes paramount, and the timeframes and opportunities to be in front of selectors and get things right, well, it starts next week here in Australia. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see you know, those players putting their hands up for Australian opportunities, you know, how good they look or don't look over the coming season.
Yeah, I think it's perhaps one of the first times in our sport that, you know, we can't take for granted the dominance of Australia and New Zealand. We don't know what our future looks like already, you know, 3 months down the line, let alone in a year's time, who will be where, what will be happening. So it's just a really interesting period, I think, internationally for netball. I mean, and those outside of the top four, how they'll approach the Comm Games and things like that. I think it's exciting. It'll be interesting to see how it unravels, I suppose.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stories to unfold from all across the world as we head towards the Comm Games.
So I also have to ask, Sue, have you been following any Super League at all?
Yes, I have been following the Super League. I've been following the Rhinos in particular because Danelle Wallum, who's over there, is
a one
training
of yours.
Partner.
Yeah.
Yes, West Coast Fever. So we certainly have our eye on Danelle, and we're devastated to see her break the wrist, and in the fashion that she did break it, it was innocuous, wasn't
painful.
It? So no, but I have been watching, and I'm excited by what's happening over there in the league. There's some extraordinary talent. And I'm also, you know, I also have a little heart and soft spot for the Sirens because I went over and spent some time. Karen Atkinson got me over, and Vicky Wilson went over as well, when was it? The year before. And I did a block of work over there with them, and I was really impressed by the way in which, you know, Leslie McDonald was shaping the group and just the character and, you know, the willingness of the group to want to be better. And so for me, I was so excited to see what they were going to deliver in 2020, and, of course, then the season went pear-shaped. So I've had my eye on them, and I'm excited by what they're doing. And, you know, the wins are coming more regularly and the confidence is growing for them. So,
They've definitely, they've got hearts and minds, I think. They've had a fantastic – I mean, for a team that was often, you know, rounding off the bottom of the table, to see them, you know, pushing the big guns to draws, like, just feel that perhaps a season still away from, like, taking wins, big wins consistently. But, fantastic. But one thing I wanted to ask you is we're starting to have this conversation over here about whether our league is too big, and – what we were talking earlier about the SSN and that it is so even, and really any team can take any on any day. That's part of the excitement of it. And I wondered, do you think that there is an optimal size for a netball league? Is 11 too many?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And it's a question that we're delving deeper into over here as we speak, as far as SSN is concerned. You're right, the eight teams at the moment with the open import policy gives us a really balanced league for the best part, year in, year out. And even when a team sits at the bottom of the ladder and may not have had many wins in our league, you would never underestimate them. That's the perception that lies within the league when every club approaches every game. There is no game that is an easy game, and that's what you want your league to get to. So, therefore, it's hard to place a number on it. So, to me, when you're trying to make a decision around what is the best number for the league, you've got to have a look at what your objectives are. So we want to have a competitive league, and I feel like we've ticked that box. But the other element that we need to now consider is ensuring that we've got enough opportunity for our Australian pathway. And with that, there's discussion at the moment around whether there might be an extension of number of players that are contracted per team.
Okay.
Or do we look to increasing, the number of teams that play within the league? So it's balancing what the objectives are. But I'm a big believer that irrespective of where the points sit on the ladder from first to last, it's how you perceive that game to be. And, you know, as I said, from inside club land, and I've been with the Fever from a coaching perspective for the last 3 years, I can tell you there has not been one game, 3 years, not been one game in those 3 years that as a club, West Coast Fever have ever, ever taken lightly. Mm-hmm. But I can say in years gone by that when teams would play certain teams in the league from the previous ANZ Championship, you would almost tick it off as a win. You wouldn't do that in this current league. So you need to build your league to the point where that's the case. So it's hard to know, you know, from your league's perspective, you know, is that the case? Even though there is a top and a bottom and the points might be vastly different, what's the perception? Do clubs tick off the fact that they think they can beat maybe a Celtic Dragons or whatever it is? And then you've got to weigh that up with the other objective. What is the objective of the league? Is this about giving opportunity? Is it about growing a particular base of English talent? You know, so you have to weigh up those objectives, and then from there you get your answer.
Yeah, that's all very wise. It's almost like you're an expert. Was I imagining that there was talk of another team entering SSN in Tasmania, or is that something I've just
No, I think Yeah, no, look, I mean, I saw that on social media as well. I think that right from the get-go of Suncorp Super Netball, there's always been vision to say, is there capacity for growth? You know, and like I said, you've got to go through and understand why you want growth and what are the outcomes of growth. So I think the vision's always been there. I imagine in the discussion of the new broadcast deal that that would have been put on the table with the broadcaster to say, you know, there is potential for growth in this five-year deal, whether it comes in year one, two, three, four, or five, because your broadcast partner has to also be across that, because there's a financial impact on that. So I would imagine that it's there for it's been on the table for consideration and discussion ongoing. But at the same time, and off the back of Hub, what we learned was that there was also some real merit in the increase of contract numbers per team. We sit with currently 10 contracts, but due to Hub life last year and a condensed season, we increased that to 12. And as it turned out, quite a number of those extended contracts that got an opportunity played crucial roles for clubs throughout season 2020. For West Coast Fever in particular, Sunday Arian and Emma Koch played roles. For the Firebirds, there was Tipper Dwan who came on, and you know, there were lots of players that got opportunity, and so that certainly raised some massive discussion over here outside of the season as to whether or not going forward there's potential to go to 12 contracts. So all of this is up for discussion and unfolding as we speak, and we'll know a little bit more once the CPA gets finalised come the middle of this year.
And what's your preference, 10 or 12?
You know what? I'm debating it. I am debating it. I see potential for 12, but I'm also mindful that there might be other ways to do it, which is, you know, you travel with 10, but, you know, you look at what the – so currently each of our clubs has the capacity for four training partners that get contracted and are financially paid. Not, you know, as a bare minimum paid. It's certainly not a minimum wage as per the CPA contracted athletes. But, you know, maybe there's potential to look at increasing some of that from a training partner perspective and a releasing of the rules that allows maybe, you know, some changing of training partners and contracted athletes through the season, you know, keeping that the pressure up, or you go to 12 contracts. I do think when you're balancing the Australian pathway, we definitely need to consider this discussion further. I don't think we should just be saying that things are working and fait accompli. And I know Lisa Alexander would have, as the former Australian coach, she would have had this constantly playing on her mind. She was a great promoter of the game and she always wanted to support the world's best netball competition and have this open import policy, but she also had to balance at the same time opportunity for her Australian athletes. So I think this discussion needs to continue to unfold. Now, I'll be a part of some of that discussion. I'll probably shape my opinion as the year goes on.
So jury's out then, I guess. That's the answer to that question.
Yeah. I just think there's more information that needs to come. It's not as simple as saying, yes, we should just have 12 or we should only have 10 and we extend partners or we should go for a new team. I think, you know, there's a lot of information that needs to be collected and collated, which I believe the league would be doing currently, and that'll be put on the floor for discussion. And, you know, at the end of the day, it'll be a decision made that's led by the league, you know, which is rightful, but it'll be in the best interest of netball in Australia going forward. So, you know, I'm sure we'll all contribute to the right decision.
Okay, so before I let you go, I thought I'd ask you two final questions, short answers, mm-hmm. if we may. Mm-hmm. Who is your player to watch for 2021?
Yeah, I know everyone's going to think because I've got my West Coast Fever hat on that I'm saying this, but I am not. I'm saying this with my commentary hat on. That I think Sunday Arian from the West Coast Fever is a really exciting Australian Diamonds prospect. She's a great reader of the game, so I'd keep my eye on her.
You know what? I believe you when you say that. I know that's not the West Coast Fever hat talking because we were talking about her last year and you were really excited about her. And I'm excited too. That developing relationship with obviously Stacey Francis would be great to see. And then the match to watch out for. Which one do you think is going to be the hot ticket? Like if we're going to be getting up early in the morning to watch one game, which one is it going to be?
Of round one?
Oh, yeah, go on. I'll give you round one. Make it.
Okay, give me round one, and I'll say, I reckon, I mean, you have to show interest towards the grand final rematch, which is the Vixens and Fever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that'll be the game of the round. I've got a feeling the game of the round will be on the Sunday, and that'll be the Firebirds and the Swifts.
Yeah.
Predominantly one of the greatest rivalries that our league has and our sports had over many years. But we've got a Firebird side that I believe is going to grow and progress this year and threaten, and we've got a Swift side that I think sort of, you know, wanting to resurrect an underperforming season 2020. They've played in plenty of grand finals together previously where they've gone to extra overtime. So for me, that will be the game of the round.
It is a mouth-watering prospect, that one. I would have to agree with you there. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Sue. It's been a pleasure to have you, as ever. Thank you for your time.
Pleasure, Chloe. Thanks for having me. And, I'll keep my eye on the season over there as it draws towards finals, and we'll kick into our season over here.
The Netball Show with Flyhawk, raising the bar for netball and women's sport.